Hey listeners, this is the second part of our conversation with Blake and Kristen Gray. To hear the first part of the conversation, please listen to the previous episode on your favorite podcast platform. Welcome to That Farm Life, planting hope, harvesting strength. That Farm Life is a production of Eagle Farms at Williams Baptist University. On That Farm Life, we talk about that life that is that of a farmer and their family. We talk about the day-to-day grind, the good times, the tough times, and everything in between. Because farming is more than a job, it's a way of life. And we're here to offer opportunities to help you deal with the stress and strains of farm life through faith, family, and community with other farmers. Now here's your host, Stan Norman.
Welcome back to the second part of our conversation with Blake and Kristen Gray. I am so grateful for their willingness to be so honest and transparent in their testimony. When last we were discussing their lives, we were talking about train wrecking. And we had sort of hit a place where I thought, okay, we're going to turn and move forward. But then, Kristen, you threw a curveball at me and said we hadn't hit rock bottom yet. So just to summarize, though, a little bit, you had made a decision to give your life to Jesus as a young girl?
Yes.
Okay.
It was.
So Blake was running from God and made no pretensions about any kind of profession of faith. That was his testimony up to that point in his life. But you had come to know the Lord, and then through a series of life events and decisions, you walked away from that.
Yeah. Yes. And not that there's one decision that's worse than another. I don't feel like that. But, you know, there are some things. Like I went through college. I did not party in college. I never drank. As a matter of fact, I never drank a drop of like anything.
Were you
I was 24, 25.
Doing church when you were in college?
Oh, yes. Okay. I mean, I had gone to the University of Arkansas. I was in a sorority. I was a Kappa Kappa Gamma, or am. I was on the Razorback Palm Squad. My health, everything was huge to me. I am a classic overachiever in how much pressure I put on myself to do everything. Everything had to be the very best. And so that was another part that was also haunting me, because I was just failing so horribly, I felt like, at the most important job I'd ever had, and that was mother. Hmm. And I just felt so alone. But yes, after that, what I talked about with my dad on my birthday in 1989, which is March the 3rd, on August the 14th of that same year, I was with Toni Clayton Fulton at the time. She used to babysit for me.
I know Toni.
Yes, I figured you might.
Yes, I do.
They lived right down the street from me my whole life, and she babysat for me, and her dad, Harold, worked for my dad forever. And wow. So she was the person. That, I mean, like, if I could say the single person at that point in time in my life that led me to the Lord, because she always had such a joy about her. It wasn't just anything. Like, she'd just be singing and she'd pray with me, and I was with her that day. I was actually riding with her to church at Eastside, and I said, Toni, I want to give my life to the Lord. And she prayed with me, and I studied. I knew the Lord. I knew about the Lord. I did the Experience in God Bible study when I was 9 years old. And looking back, I think, I don't know if I could make it through that one today, probably. But so my life has been one of following Christ, you know. But I also know that when you are convicted, if you're a follower and you know what you're doing, then that's when you really want to run. And from it, because you don't want to feel bad about it. You want to run from the truth. And the irony of it was, the more I ran, well, then the less I stopped being convicted. And I know that was a horrible thing, because I didn't know the difference anymore. I was just selfish. Yeah. I was selfish. And this is what's going to make me happy right now, as I would say, the pleasures of the flesh and all that kind of thing.
So you came to know the Lord, life. Now you're not.
Yes.
And so now you two are married.
Now we're married.
Now you're married, but we hadn't hit rock bottom yet, so.
He's thinking, what more could possibly happen now?
This is my first rodeo, so I know there could be more. So yeah. What before the redeeming, restoring mercy of God starts flowing obviously in your life, we're going to assert He's always been there, working even in you guys running away, that He is still working to draw you back to Himself. But before that begins to really play out, you're going to hit rock bottom. What is going on? What's happening?
You want me to go first?
I'll let you lead the way.
Okay. He wants you to lead the way to rock bottom.
Okay, he wants me to lead my way. We're jumping off this cliff together, well, we I guess. Did. But so now we're married, and we're, you know, we have a blended family. And the thing is, Blake and I always just really, really loved each other. Or I could say I really loved him. And
I fell in love with you and your daughter, which is my daughter now.
Yes. That's a part of our redemption.
It really is. And I think the big part of me, I did leave for a short period before we wound up getting married. And I kept going back to, I could see the good in her. And I was like, it's there. And I couldn't stand for that little girl to be there without me, honestly. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I was probably the best father figure for my own two boys, but she deserved that, I felt like. And I wanted to do that. And the love I had for her, just it kind of brought us back together. Unfortunately, we're still just not at a great point in our lives.
Yeah, because I was still just struggling so bad. And I did not even know it at the time, which I found out later. But I was actually diagnosed medically and therapist with PTSD. I mean, and I did not know this at the time. I didn't know what I was struggling with until I actually decided I was going to get some help. So when I would understand when he would do things that would make, that was similar.
So is the partying still going on?
Yes.
You're married?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Substance abuse still going on?
Yes.
Both of you?
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway, so when he would do things like be really forceful, or what I felt like was yelling, which he wouldn't, or when he would never come home, or when he wouldn't be affectionate, neglect was one of the things, and physical neglect was one of the things that was used as a punishment for me before. And so I would equate that to, oh my gosh, this is what's happening to me again. This is what's happening to me again. And so it'd take me back there, and it was a trigger. And not that Blake was the trigger, the action was triggering my reaction, which was to go drink some more or go take another. But it wasn't just one thing, you know, that was just bad and just my depression. And then, you know, then you get depressed, and then you get anxious. And then what do? Then you want to isolate yourself. Then you lose your drive, and you kind of, you know, do all these things. And I was still trying to, you know, act like I was okay, you know, even though I knew that I wasn't okay. And we got to the point to where we just hadn't been married very long. And he says, I can't deal with this anymore.
No, I couldn't. Yeah. I mean, I had been with her long enough. I could just honestly look at her and see, you know, if she was under the influence or something. And you know, there's a lot of times I may have been under the influence coming home at night, you know, out of the field. At this point, I am farming on my own and working full time. And it was a struggle. And, you know, I was gone a lot. We just didn't cope well with that. And, you know, if this sounds bad, but if we were sober, we were good. You know, it was when you added that mix in there, we spiraled just out of control, it seemed like.
Oh, wow. We didn't even say that the way you started farming on your own was you started farming my parents' ground.
Yeah.
I
was farming my grandma's farm with my uncle and cousin, which I owe everything to. They taught me everything I know. And her farm became available. And we weren't together at this point. And she was gracious enough to let me put a plan in place, you know, and come in and give her a business proposal on what I was going to do with the farm, and actually chose me to farm it. And it was great. And everybody thinks a lot it was because of us, but we actually weren't together, and she didn't know me anything at the time. And I'm forever grateful for that chance to get started in the industry I love.
Of course, I hoped we would be, and because I loved him so much, that the fact that he was a farmer was just a thing. Not that I was dealing with it well, because I was not.
So you're thinking of leaving the marriage?
Yes.
Did you think about it, or did you leave?
I did not leave the marriage. I was to a point, I mean, this is all 2023. I mean,
yeah, this year
we're going into my oldest graduation into May, and life had gotten to a point. I mean, I'm not drinking as much, I would say, at this point, and you know, I felt like I was keeping the home thing going a little bit, and I just felt a lot of pressure. It got to a point I was like, the kids don't deserve this. I don't deserve this. I don't want this. I was better off doing life by myself than to have to come home and the things we were dealing with. It was bad. So I was totally prepared. The end of, I guess, the beginning of May, we just planted rice. I was ready to pack my bags and leave. We had a brand new house together, and if I needed to go live in a tent or a single wide trailer, I was good with that. I didn't care about what we had or how we split. I just wanted out, honestly, at that point. We were there. It was bad.
So what happened?
Here's the turning point that I will say. This actually started in January, and my best friend Tiffany Henson, who is interesting, she is a lifelong friend of a long time, but a kind of a new best friend. She and her husband Dustin had moved to the Central Paragould campus. The church, yes. And from the First United Methodist Church. And she had gotten really involved there. And she saw the struggle I was going through. And she said, hey, let's go to Flourish. And Flourish is the women's, I guess,
women's
kind
ministry
of
group.
Ministry, like the gathering that, you know, and it's not just for, it's for everybody. She said, let's go to Flourish together. And it was a Saturday during the day, and I got up and went, and I had always, and I have to just back into this. I mean, I'd always just really felt this connection with Blake, Ligon, and Joy because of this property. And actually, my dad was the one that led me to meet Blake Ligon. Blake Ligon is the teaching pastor at
the Central
Paragould campus.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And his wife, Joy.
Yes.
And so the first time I met Blake Ligon, it was before I met Blake Gray. We've got a lot of Blakes going on.
There's
here.
A Blaken all over here.
There's a Blaken.
We're Blaken everywhere here.
And before my dad had died, and they were trying to get this property, this Bethel property, sold, and are trying to come to a agreement. But the problem was what the budget was for the church, and what my dad, because he knew he was not going to live, you know, he was dying. He was trying to make sure my mom was taken care of, and we were taken care of at this property, which nobody seemed to know too much at the time, but we're trying to get all that together. And so he sent me, I'll never forget this day, he sent me down here to Paragould to Hag Brown and to talk to Josh Brown with a proposal that he has. And I know he knew exactly what was going to happen. And I think they might have even talked about it. And Josh says, I know you've never met Blake. And I said, oh, I would just love to meet Blake Ligon, I'm talking about this time. And he said, well, how about we just set up a meeting? And I'll never forget going in his office. And here's his thing. He asked us at church. He's like, do you know the Lord, or do you know about the Lord? And I could honestly say, I know the Lord. You know, I don't just know about the Lord, but I know the Lord. I'm just not living in this path right now.
And you guys are married.
Yeah, not at this point. I know I'm backtracking again.
Okay.
When I met Blake Ligon, all this so I've always had this feeling like we've just always had this thing with this property, this church, and it's always spoken to me. And so I went to Flourish, met some girls there, and they invited me to join a D group, which I started in January. And then it was one day I was in church, and it was in February, and I cannot remember the name of the sermon. I should have looked up at it, but it was about being a child of God. And
now you're in church, you're married.
I am married, I'm in church, I am going to church. Blake is not going
okay.
with me. And it wasn't just absolutely, no, I'm not even going to think about it. It was absolutely not, don't talk to me about it anymore.
She got up and went to church, I got up and went to work. That was kind of our thing on Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm in church, and Blake Ligon starts talking about being, who are we? You know, who is it the Lord calls us to be? And then he he says, well, here's who we are. You are a child of God. And then he says, I want to actually play a clip of one of the greatest movies of all time for you. And he said, The Lion King. And it was the very end of that movie where, or kind of in the middle, where Rafiki goes back to get Simba, and he sees his dad, and he's like, remember who you are, and all these things, if everybody's seen The Lion King. But I just broke down and just sobbed that day, because my dad and I would watch that movie over and over, and he'd always say, remember. And I felt like not only God was talking to me, but I felt like that my father was sitting here saying, Kristen, remember who you are. I mean, you're my daughter, you're my child, you're God's child. And that day I decided that I was going to be baptized. And I had been baptized earlier in my life, you know, as a christened as an infant. I had been through confirmation in the Methodist church. I knew I was saved. It wasn't that I felt like I needed to do it to be saved, but I wanted it to be the outward expression of what I knew in my heart.
Right.
And that's a really hard thing for a little Methodist girl, you know, to get up there in front of everybody and do that. But I did. And that was March the 5th. And I just thought,
see her get baptized?
Well, we were front row that day.
Okay. So you were in church that day.
I was. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And he would say things to me like, oh, this is going to be great. Like, this isn't really going to do anything. It's not going to help anything. You know, you're just going to go right back the way you were. And you know, because our marriage was still at a very bad point, and I was still struggling so, so bad. And I can say from that point, that's when it really got worse.
Yeah, this is the next few months where we hit the bottom.
Because I felt like, okay, well, here I am. I'm trying to do, you know, here I am. I'm back on track. I'm, you know, blah, blah, you know. And all these things. And it was like, then that's when I started feeling like I was being attacked. I told my friend, I said, I feel like I'm being attacked. I feel like Satan's like literally like throwing every single thing at me. Like anything Blake could have said that hurt me or done, it happened. And it wasn't like, I mean, huge things, but they were huge things to me. But at that time, that was when I'm like, okay, I have the Lord. I know in my heart where I'm going, but this is when I sought out help, therapy, counseling, trauma counseling.
So is this the bottom?
We're at the bottom.
We're at the bottom.
And so you're getting ready to get out.
Yep.
You've had this. I'm in church, and the Lord's moving in my life, and I made this decision to got baptized, and then it didn't just turn around on Maggie.
No, you're it did not.
So we're at bottom. What does bottom look like, and where does God start moving you off the bottom?
Bottom looks like to me was I mean, just probably drinking more than anything, probably taking as much medication. I was just self-medicating as much as I could to be numb, because he would say, this is it. I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm not going to be here. You know, I mean, terrible fights. Not even being able to get out of bed in the day. Just rock bottom. I don't, you know, not being able to function. And a lot of that was crippling emotionally, was a lot of my thing, was just emotionally crippled, like not wanting to see anybody, not wanting to do anything.
So what happened?
And then finally I said, okay, well, I cannot do this by myself. And like, I've got to have some help. And so I have spent a tremendous amount of hours in therapy and trauma therapists, you know, substance abuse counseling.
So this wasn't your first time to seek out help?
Yeah, well, this was my first. This was it. I have said I wasn't ashamed of it, but I hadn't gotten to the point where I was like, I've got to have some outside help. And because I felt like if I was saved and I was in church already and all these things, that I shouldn't have to have any outside help. But then it occurred to me, you know, it's okay that I'm, you know, still doing this. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go do this. I'm going to get some help. And it's, you know, I'm going to change. And
so you reached out for some help.
Yes.
He didn't.
Well, that reached out for me or reached out for him.
You're reaching out for you.
Yes, I'm reaching out for me. Yes.
And you are
I'm
packing
here.
A bag?
She walks in and tells me, hey, I'm getting help. And I'm like, yeah, right. You know, I've heard this one before along with any other thing. I mean, we were just at that point of, I don't know how, I guess we were so frustrated with one another. It was just a constant bicker back and forth. And I was like, you know, whatever, we'll see, you know. And
remember me asking you if you ever thought you'd find any love for me?
Yeah, again? I do.
And you said, no, it's gone. You're like, it's over. It's gone. There's no love left. You said, I have no love left.
I told you, I had given everything I had at that point, and it was gone. My bucket was empty. I didn't know what to do. I was at my wit's end. I felt like I drank more at this point to cope for myself to go home because I had no clue what kind of situation I was going to walk into. And it was rough. I mean, and I kind of went through this plateau area. Like, I was like, okay, well, if I cut back drinking, we don't keep alcohol in the house. You know, we don't have any of these things that make it readily accessible. It's going to get better. And we went through this phase, and I was like, no matter what I did, it didn't get better. We had tried.
It was better there for a while. There was better there for a while.
I mean, there was. It was that emotional roller coaster. But, we were up and down.
Yeah, it was just up and down.
The alcohol really is not the problem.
No, it was never the problem.
That's right.
That was the thing. It was neither one of us had coped and dealt with the issues in our lives.
Mm-hmm. So she's getting help. You're not.
I'm not. No, I'm the cynical one here, okay, saying, what are we doing with all this?
What's happening here? Yeah. So you're getting help. Yeah. Yes. Maybe getting better.
Yes.
And he is not.
No. And here I come, you know, and here I'm like, okay. And this is why I have this passage of scripture, like, and Blake Ligon preached about this one Sunday. I'm still getting up. I'm still going to church. I'm getting Kirkley going to church. Even if he wasn't working, he's on the couch, and he'd even say things like, go get God, you go get God, you know, and just things like that, you know, just jabbing, you know. But I was like, okay. And so, and in 1 Peter 3, it talks about the wives, you must accept the authority of your husbands. Then even if some refuse to obey the good news, your godly lives will speak to them without any words. They will be won over by observing your pure and reverent lives. Don't be concerned about the outward beauty of fancy hairstyles, expensive jewelry, or beautiful clothes. You should clothe yourselves instead with the beauty that comes from within, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is so precious to God. So and everybody talks about the Proverbs 31 wife, and I have believed that, but that passage, it just kept over. I kept thinking, and when I was talking, when I talked to my therapist, I'd say, okay, you know, I cannot make Blake do anything. You know, I cannot do anything, and I just have to fix myself. I mean, and whatever he does, it's just going to be what he's going to do, and I cannot control it. You know, it just, and here I was thinking, I'm about to cause what before I was thinking, I'm causing what happened to me before. I am causing it now because I don't blame him. I wouldn't have wanted to be married to me. And I was like, gosh, I just hate this farming. I just hate it. You're gone all the time. You're never here with the kids. You know, all these things that were just awful. And then when I read this and I stopped and I thought, you know, one of the things I love about him so much is the fact that he's a farmer. And I love agriculture. I love farming. And it was never the farming. And it occurred to me that my place was to support him and to respect him and not make his life harder, and which I was doing, and not gripe at him and not, okay, why aren't you doing this? And why aren't you doing that? And why can't we go on this trip? And all these things. And so I just practiced every day that gentle and quiet spirit and just kept going to church, kept on and on and on.
So you're being a 1 Peter 3 woman, and somewhere things begin to turn for you.
It does. So she convinces me one Sunday. She's like, just give it a try. And I said, you know what? At this point, she's working on herself. I mean, I'm seeing the accomplishment she's making, and I'm like, you know what? This has hope. You know, we might can make this work. Because I still loved her. I didn't want to leave.
Love was never the problem.
I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to leave Kirkley behind. I didn't want to leave the boys. I mean, my kids adore her. So we go. And I don't remember exactly what Blake preached about that Sunday, but it was just eye-opening. I was like, I felt like it was directed towards me that day. There was a reason I was convinced to go, and I was like, hey, you know what? This is what I was supposed to do. I've ran this whole time from this situation And I walked out of church, and it was the strangest feeling. It was like a weight was lifted off of me. I mean, and that was the beginning of the repair with us, honestly.
How long ago was this?
This would have been,
I'd say, August, maybe.
Yeah, July, August area. Yeah.
2 months, okay.
Actually, it might have even been in June, because I'm thinking it was that day when he was talking about the Proverbs 31 man.
I do believe you're correct, actually.
Wow, okay.
So this is relatively new. 6 months, I'm not trying to say I jumped on a bandwagon or anything, but no. I felt I'd never been to a church my whole life. And granted, I went to church with my family, and one of my families kind of felt like I ran the church. You know, everybody was there. But I never felt like I truly belonged somewhere. And I can go there and I come out and I feel like I belong. We have made friends. Like, I almost get anxious if I cannot be there. Like, it's a total different turnaround. I feel like this has all happened for a reason.
Wow. So you're now in a community of faith together.
Yes.
And the Lord is bringing healing and redemption to you individually and as a family, as a couple. Okay.
Yes.
And probably my wife and I just celebrated 4 years of marriage, and we're still in process of God bringing mercy and healing and grace to our marriage as well as to the two of you. You've been married how long now?
It'll be 2 years this December the 31st. Not long.
Right, well, hey, every day is a step in the right direction. So
correct.
For the first time in my life, I honestly I feel like I'm safe. Like I mean, I know we're in this together. You know, I'm not terrified anymore. I mean, I learned how to cope with any of that. I don't have any panic attacks anymore. Nothing. I mean, like every single thing was healed. And if you would have told me a year ago or 6 months ago that we would be sitting here, I would have said, you are crazy. I don't care who it was. There's no way that we are too far gone. There's no way that this miracle is ever going to happen for us. And it has.
So a question for you.
Sure.
I'm going to put on my pastor's hat now.
Yeah.
Somewhere in here, I'm assuming there was some kind of decision to be a follower of Jesus.
There was, okay. Yeah. And, I mean, that was kind of, I mean, my big deal is, I mean, I decided that I had ran so long that maybe I should just stop and listen and let him guide me for a change instead of trying to do this all on my own. You know, I look back at farming. There's so many things I can control. And I wanted to control, but at the end of the day, it's up to God. I mean, if it's going to rain, if the sun's going to shine.
Farming is the one job I know where hope is a strategy.
You have to have it. And when you lose hope, you don't have anything farming. I mean, because you live on a whim and a prayer. I mean, in all reality, and I didn't want to pray for that help. And now I'm not ashamed to pray for that help. I realized I needed all the help he could give me to get through everything. And it's just such a better way of life now. It's amazing how much more enjoyable life is than trying to turn to a bottle every time something bad happens. It is okay to hit your knees and pray.
Yes, it is.
And not run to the bar.
Yes, it is. Wow. So we probably need to draw this to a conclusion, but I want to give you guys a chance to speak to our listeners. And if you know of, or let's just assume we live in a fallen, broken world, and the path that you two have walked, you're not the first to walk down those paths, and unfortunately, you won't be the last. And there may be some listeners now who either are walking down this path or have close friends that are on this similar path that you guys have been down. What would you say to Blake? I want to give you a chance to speak to the farmers and to the husbands, and then Kristen, I want to give you a chance to speak to the farm gals and the wives and the mothers. So what would you say to a guy that looked a lot like you used to?
You know, if I could go back to that person and talk to him, I would like to – I just tell you, I mean, we have a farm life group at church, and I will tell you that's been one of the biggest helps and transformations is to find out there are other people out there struggling with the same problems we all have every day. And find that group that has a positive influence. I'm still best friends with all my friends I've got, but it's being able to put God in with that has been a huge blessing and a total transformation of myself in that. And I would challenge anyone to go out there and find that group that makes you do better, you know, makes you want to be a better person and help. And I hope our story can help anybody. I mean, it's not, you know, we've all been in dark places in our lives, but I feel like if anybody, you know, gets help out of this, this was worth doing for sure.
So your encouragement would be find some farmers of faith.
100%. I'm a firm believer in that. It has transformed my life, hands down.
Amen. That's a good word. Kristen, there's somebody out there that may have, although the circumstances are probably different, their story may be very similar to yours. What would you say to that woman?
I would say to that woman that I get it, I understand, and that it's so very, very easy to get down when you're alone, and it's so easy to get tired every night. You're trying to get the kids to bed. You're doing the grocery shopping, especially if you're working outside the home too. Yeah. It's so very easy to get discouraged with those ball games or those dinners you miss, the plans you can't make, the trips you can't take. It's so easy to always see that and get into that mindset that, okay, well, this is what I'm doing for you. What are you going to do for me? And to me, the humbling thing was when I sat back and thought, I need to support him in the best way that I can in this life that is full of blessings. I mean, beyond anything that could happen. And obviously for me, the Lord, I feel like my personal story has been one where I can say, you're a child of God, and he is not going to let you go, no matter what path you go down, no matter how bad it gets, no matter what decisions you make. Like, you're his child, and he will bring you home. And that's what I felt like that one day in church was like, he was like, God was saying, my child, or, you know, my dad, you've come home. You know, I feel like my whole life has been building up to get ready to tell this story. And I have a friend that's going through another hard time, and she said, I can't wait to hear about, you know, the story in your life, and maybe that'll happen for me one day. And I said, well, you know, your story's just not ready to tell yet. And I'm not saying our story's over by any stretch of the imagination, but it didn't have a conclusion. It didn't have an end, like, this is what you've gone through, and this is what God is saying, and this is the glory that I have for you in your life. If you, all you had to do was follow me the whole time. I've liked God saying that all you had to do was just follow me and surrender to me. And to me, it was that point of surrender. When I could surrender, then my life could have been changed. And I would just say, don't lose hope. Find women of faith. We are out there to support each other. Farming's a great community, and there's a lot of joy in it.
That's a good place to conclude an incredible testimony. I want to thank both of you. This took courage, and it took faith, and I deeply appreciate your willingness to come here today and open your hearts and your lives as a testimony of God's grace that I am confident will speak to many, many, and show them that there is a way of redemption, that they are not beyond hope. Thank you. This concludes a two-part series on That Farm Life podcast with Blake and Kristen Gray. We are grateful for their ministry to us today. Thank you for coming here. This has been a special time. We hope it has been something of meaning and hope for you. If you are struggling, I would encourage you to listen to the advice you heard here. Find help. Find a pastor. Find a community of faith. And immerse yourself in the community of faith of like-minded believers and find God's grace. That is our word for you today. Thank you for listening today. The farming community is a special community. We love our farmers. We love the ag community. And remember our adage, keep the faith and keep farming.
You've been listening to That Farm Life, planting hope, harvesting strength, with your host, Stan Norman. That Farm Life is a creation of AgriHealth Network and is produced by Eagle Farms at Williams Baptist University. AgriHealth Network exists to offer opportunities to help you deal with the stress and strains of farm life through faith, family, and community with other farmers. You can learn more about AgriHealth Network at agrihealth.net and more about Williams at williamsbu.edu. That Farm Life is produced and edited by Mike Dixon. Chris Grady and Brett Cooper serve as executive producers, and Elizabeth Ring is our production assistant. Thanks for listening, and as always, keep farming and keep the faith.